God is at work, and He's calling His people to rise in truth. Truth Rising is a powerful new documentary from Focus on the Family and the Colson Center. See how ordinary Christians choose courage in a culture that needs truth. Watch Truth Rising starting September 5th and find out how you can be a part of the change and become an agent of restoration. Sign up at truthrising.com. That's truthrising.com.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Wednesday, August the 20th, 2025. And thanks for listening to AFR. Joining me in studio is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Wesley Wildman. Good morning, Wesley.
Good morning.
And Fred Jackson.
Good morning to you, Tim.
All right, so we appreciate everybody listening to our program each and every day. Wesley, how can people, if they want to, you know, use all kinds of our outreach that we have here, how can they do that?
They can. You talking about the Fred and Wesley program?
Yeah, the ones y'all tried to hijack the other day. Like Ed, I didn't notice.
Like Ed,
yeah, we're shrewd. Like
we know that. A coup when we see
yes,
one.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
So how can people watch it? How can people? We got various ways people can engage, right?
We sure do. I recommend going to AFR.net.
You recommend it?
Yes, okay. I recommend it. It's nice and pretty and beautiful.
Okay.
Very functional, user-friendly, all those things.
AFR.net?
Yes. Yeah, well, because there's so many different options, I was going to get to all of them, Dad, but I'm saying that I recommend this one as the easiest one to do, okay?
See, Tim asks the question and then doesn't let you answer.
No, it's you know. All right, so AFR.net is a good place because we archive all our radio programs. You should just see Dad's face.
No, he can't help himself.
I have muted myself. Go ahead.
Your face is.
I know, but my face is. That's why I'm fighting the flesh is fighting the spirit.
Let me just say, your face and Wesley, you said before the show started, I don't think we're going to get very far.
No.
I'm just going to say the face that you were making as Wesley was speaking,
right.
The face that says, I don't care what you're going to say. I have what I'm going to say in just a second is one I see all the time with my wife.
For those who don't know, Wesley's my eldest son, and we will get beyond this.
We will.
But at this moment, it's a little stressful. Go ahead. I'll be quiet.
AFR.net. Also, the reason that's a place to go is because we archive all of our radio programs there. So anything that you heard throughout the day, but maybe you had to get out of your car, maybe you had to stop, you can go back and listen there. Also, you can see our lineup. So we do have radio on the weekends.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of people don't listen on the weekends, but we have some special programming on the weekends that you can't hear during the week, like Frank Turk and others as well. So you can see our lineup there. Also, you can download our app, but the easiest way to download the app is by going to AFR.net. So that's the reason I said I recommend going there, is because you can download our app from there, and also you can connect with us in different ways there. So once you're at AFR.net, you can see our Facebook, our Twitter account, all those other means of connecting with us. So go to AFR.net.
It's a very, very good, thing pointing people, and we probably don't do this enough here on this radio program, but at AFR.net, we not only have lists of podcasts, the radio station lineup, but also a station finder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then when you mention the apps, it's not just for your Apple phone, it's for your Android, it's for Roku, it's for Alexa, all those kinds of things where you can access AFR programming in a myriad of ways. And, of course, the government's paying attention to everything you do, but still, you can find
it. I like the use of the word myriad right there.
Myriad.
Yeah, we haven't used that enough.
I try to use words in a myriad of ways.
Yeah. Well, Fred's got a myriad of stories we need to cover, so we need to get right to it.
Right.
Go ahead, Fred.
All right. Well, you know, back about 7 or 8 days ago, when the National Weather People announced that Hurricane Irwin would not make a direct impact on the East Coast. A lot of people kind of just forgot that story. But I'm telling you, if you live on the East Coast, anywhere from Florida to New England, you're paying attention right now. Hurricane Irwin at this moment, they say.
Is it Irwin or Aaron?
I say Irwin, but it could be Irwin. Okay. The hurricane that we are talking about.
All right.
It's about 400 miles south-southeast of North Carolina's Cape Hatteras. And the storm surge on the Outer Banks, they're now saying could reach waves of up to 15 feet.
Wow.
Mandatory evacuations have been ordered already on Hatteras and some of the islands out there. And more than 2,000 people have already left the area since Monday. North Carolina's Governor Josh Stein is warning coastal residents to be prepared to evacuate and declared a state of emergency already. Bulldozers are trying to shore up the dunes, and trucks from the lower power company were on hand to respond to downed wires. Now, I mentioned all the way up to New England. New York City has closed its beaches to swimming today and tomorrow. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has ordered three state beaches on Long Island to prohibit swimming through Thursday. The big concern in all of this has to do with riptides, and very, very dangerous. A lot of people take, you know, they go to the beach, they see the big waves. This is going to be fun. We're going to jump in. You know, they have a surfboard, all of those things. No, do not do that.
Because in you can't see the riptides. That's what makes them so dangerous.
Yeah, and people, if they get caught up in these things, they panic.
Right.
There are ways to deal with them, but most swimmers, they don't know how to do that. So this, folks, is very dangerous.
Let me ask you this. When the when they mentioned 20-foot waves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that mean when the waves hit the beach, they're coming in at 20 feet? Or does that mean somewhere out in the ocean they're 20 feet?
Well, somewhere, you know? I would do a compromise on that. Somewhere near the shore they can reach. Because waves build, if you go to the beach, waves build as it gets into shallow water.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes up.
I think in terms of a storm, they're talking about the danger posed by the size of the waves when they reach shore. Now, I don't know how far inland it travels at 15 or 20 feet, but I saw some video here just a second ago, a few minutes ago, where they're talking about it maybe swallowing houses that are on the beach.
Yep.
Because it pulls back. It not only can knock these things over, but then drag them.
That's why I don't have a beach house right there.
Yes. That's reason number 14.
Yeah. But that's why you rent and go home and leave it there for somebody else.
That's true. By the way, the hurricane's name is Aaron.
Aaron?
E-R-I-N.
Okay.
We've got to let Fred have some leeway on Canadian pronunciation.
That's right.
But it's pronounced how? How is it pronounced?
Aaron.
Aaron. E-R-I-N.
Unless you're a legal alien from up north. By the way, I'm looking at our own website, American Family News, AFN.net. The story we have posted there, it says it has become an unusually large and deceptive storm because, like you said, a lot of people were just kind of, okay, that must have gone by at some point, but now it's actually coming in and it is growing in size and it's stretching 265 miles from its core. So, they expect it to grow larger in size as it moves through the Atlantic.
Because the reason I asked that question, that makes a big difference. I mean, a 20-foot wall of water, a wave, if waves are coming into the to the shoreline at 20 feet, I mean, that's a tidal wave, right? Almost. I mean, so that's like a tsunami almost coming in. If it's coming in that high when it hits the beach.
Yeah, and I don't know like how far inland it goes. I'm sure that size diminishes as it hits the shore.
Yeah.
It starts to collapse.
Anyway, bad day for swimming.
It is, you know, for folks that were planning a late summer vacation visit to the East Coast.
Right.
Going to be very disappointing.
Yeah. When is this expected to pass?
Well, there already is the National Weather Service this morning saying life-threatening surf and 100-mile-per-hour winds will lash the East Coast. That's starting today in the southern part.
Okay, the map I'm looking at and the trajectory here, it's looking by about Friday morning, though, should be past as far as it
as far
cleared.
As far as in the south. But the warnings are continuing on out into Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, the article I was referring to on AFN.net, it says that the storm will reach Massachusetts later this week. So yeah. Friday yeah. makes sense.
Well, here we are near the end of August. We haven't had a hurricane.
Yeah. And this is just a tropical storm, right? Or is
No,
it's a hurricane.
It's a cat, too. Yeah.
Right. It's way out there. I'm talking about a hurricane come in and to the Gulf of Mexico and hit Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi,
yeah.
or Florida, something like that. We haven't had one of those.
Well, I'm shocked because I thought climate change meant we were going to get hurricane.
That's what they say. That's what they
hurricane.
Say every year, and one year yep. they're going to be right.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
True.
One year, I remember what was 5 years ago, they were going, mega storms are going to just come in wave after wave.
Yeah. And we didn't have one.
We didn't have one. So anyway, next story, Fred.
Well, just before coming into the studio here, Fox was reporting on a poll this morning taken of Ukrainians, and the will to continue this war amongst Ukrainians has plummeted dramatically. And that's interesting timing on this poll, given everything that we've been talking about, the Alaska meeting last Friday, the meeting on Monday of these European leaders, because has been reported that Putin has continued his attack against the Ukrainians. All of this while NATO leaders have been meeting to talk about this supposed security area that they would be willing to man if there is an end to this war anytime soon. Trump apparently is still trying to put together a meeting between Zelensky, the Ukrainian leader, and Vladimir Putin. That is still going on. So we're not hearing reporting about exactly where things are as far as negotiations go at this hour. But Rebecca Heinrich is a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. She's also the director of the Keystone Defense Initiative. And she was interviewed on Fox this morning. And she says President Trump is a believer in peace comes through strength. And he is going to try to push through this. Cut number 14.
Well, they're flexing as the United States prepares and leads this coalition of the willing to come up with real defense plans. Remember, the security commitments that the United States and European allies provide Ukraine cannot be symbolic. This is not Ukraine's first rodeo when it comes to security commitments. We've got that 1994 Budapest agreement where Russia promised not to invade Ukraine, and the UK and the US were supposed to come to its help if it was. And so there has to be concrete forces. There has to be European forces in Ukraine. And the United States is the glue, Brian. We are the ones that Russia fears. And so the United States has to have a no-kidding military security commitment to Ukraine. So Russia's going to have bluster. They're going to oppose this. But if we want peace, this is how you get it. Peace through strength, not through capitulation or going backward.
Okay. I don't know what she's talking about. Strength.
You're talking about the 94?
No, I know. That's out the window.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm talking about... with all due respect, I'm not saying she's obviously very smart. She's a senior fellow.
Yes, at the Hudson.
Fellow means professor like,
yeah.
right? Am I
yes.
right? That's what that term means. Anyway, so she is talking there by me saying I don't know what she's talking about. We, the United States, are not going to go to war with Russia over the Ukraine. So. We're not going to make that kind of, we're not going to make the kind of commitment she's talking about where we say, if Russia doesn't do so-and-so, we, the United States, will enter this war on behalf of Ukraine. And to furthermore, this is just my looking at this. I think Vladimir Putin, that's not really all he cares about. Other than that, he's going to continue the war in Ukraine till he takes over the country if he can. That's my take on this. I don't, if, if Vladimir Putin was going to agree to a peace agreement, he would have done so by now. How many phone calls and meetings? Well, they've only had one meeting, but do you have to say stop killing people in Ukraine and let's work out a peace deal? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I think he would have taken all of Ukraine if he had been able to.
Right.
And the Ukrainians put up a more stubborn resistance than he expected. Russia has, in a sense, I mean, they've taken land, but they've taken a beating while they've done it.
Yeah.
And so
A lot of dead bodies,
a lot of injured people, a lot of military members. I think a million on the
Imagine
side of
that.
Russia.
Imagine
yeah, a million.
That.
Now, they have 140 million in their country, but that's a million people that are either not coming home or are coming home injured. So I think it's clear he would have taken all of Ukraine if he could. I think he's probably angry that he couldn't. There are a lot of people who are surprised that Russia's military was not capable of taking Ukraine.
Right.
So there's a little bit of pride, you know, involved here. Now she, what was her name? This lady who we just heard from.
I'm not familiar with her.
Senior fella.
Yeah.
She's senior fella.
Rebecca Heinrich.
Okay. So she, you know, she did make, you know, the point that, you know, Russia is not, you know, that they're continuing to hit Ukraine.
Yes.
She considers that bluster. Maybe it is. I don't know. But it to me, it's psychotic behavior. Putin is not only a dictator. He's savage. Uh-huh. Because this latest round
right.
of attacks, this was in a residential area.
Right.
And that's psychotic behavior. And
that's not the sign of a man who wants peace.
Right.
And wants a war to end.
Yeah.
So
y'all want to know what I think?
Yeah, we do.
I do.
Lay it out there.
In the clear mind.
Are you a senior fella?
No, I'm not far from.
You're a
senior
junior
fella? Not a junior fella either.
We know you're a fella. That's right.
You're a good fella.
I got through 5 years in a 4-year degree. Okay.
I understand. So let us have it.
All right. Next story.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what I think about it.
Okay. Wesley's just not interested at all.
I'm over it. It's the same thing every day with Trump and Russia and all.
Well, it is.
It's a big story. It's a big story,
and there's a lot of people suffering.
Yes. I'm more so referring to I'm over it. Is Trump going to influence to make a deal or not? Going to make a deal or not?
Yeah.
Is going to make a deal or not?
And we definitely know. You're opposed to U.S. military.
Oh, 100%.
I think we all are, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think Putin knows that.
Yes.
And so we're not going to get into it with Russia. If Russia wants to take Ukraine, then I think the view of most Americans is, I'm sorry that's the case, but they'll have to fight that out themselves.
Mm. Well, I would say this, that he's out of places he can take
who?
Without Putin. Without going to war with NATO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's hedged in. Now, Belarus is another country that's quote-unquote unaffiliated, but they are mostly
pro-Russian. Yeah.
So, but Ukraine is it. There's nowhere else for him to go. Putin, I'm talking about. Next country he tries to pick is a NATO country.
Yeah.
And he would have war with the U.S.
Are you surprised that Trump hadn't come up with a nickname for Putin yet, though? Is that surprising to you?
No, because President Trump has shown, and you're going to laugh at this.
He didn't have one for Zelensky.
You're going to laugh at this, Tim. He has shown restraint uh-huh. on occasion, okay, when he thinks a deal is still possible.
That's true.
Now, if these collapse, these talks, and Putin doesn't want to meet with Zelensky, he may come up with a nickname. But right now, he knows that he's got to try to play a little, nice
yeah.
with Putin to try to get.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thanks for listening to the program. Tim, Ed, Fred, and Wesley. Next story, Fred.
Well, it's a fight of another type.
Uh-huh.
And this fight is over the legitimacy of COVID vaccines. And the fight right now is
between... Now we're talking.
Well, you look around the room, Fred.
Wesley perked up.
Well, the fight right now, and has become very open as of yesterday, is between the Centers for Disease Control, which has backed off dramatically from recommending COVID vaccines, especially for young kids. Well, yesterday, the American Academy of Pediatrics officially recommended that COVID vaccines for children as young as 6 months, which totally goes against where the CDC is right now.
And excuse me just a minute. Mm-hmm. We have two organizations you're talking about. The CDC, everybody knows.
The federal government.
Yeah, the Centers for Disease Control.
Yes.
Why do I want to say in Atlanta?
Well, it is based in Atlanta.
But that's what they always introduce it as, right?
Yeah.
The news media. The Centers for Disease, today the Centers for Disease Control.
And Prevention.
In Atlanta.
Yeah.
In Atlanta. Anyway, so you got the CDC, and then, but the second organization?
The American Academy of Pediatrics.
Okay, that's for doctors for kids.
Yes.
Yes, but one of them is government funded and the other one's not.
That is correct.
It's a professional organization.
That's right.
Okay, what did the American Association of Pediatrics. Academy of Pediatrics. What did they say?
Yesterday, they're recommending the COVID vaccine for children as young as 6 months old.
That seems.
You got to follow the.
You get it.
Ed gets emotional.
I do get emotional. You got to follow the science. You got one scientific organization says give the shot to the kids, and another one saying no. So how are we supposed to follow the science?
6 months old.
Yes. That's what they're saying.
Oh, you mean cut to the chase?
Yeah, you cut right to the chase.
Right to the chase. The reason is they overproduced the number of shots, and so now it's a money mechanism, and so they're wanting to get as many shots. So, and if you scare a mother to death about her child potentially getting sick, you can make them do anything. And so you can make them give them shots at 6 months old if you tell them that they have to have this or otherwise COVID.
But for COVID.
I understand. I'm cutting to the chase.
Yeah. Wesley, yeah. For a young man, you have become very cynical.
Right.
And suspicious.
Very suspicious.
Right. Yeah. You got many years of cynicism left.
Yes, right. Yeah.
What's going on here,
Fred? But now, hold on.
Yeah. You want to finish?
Well, I don't know why you're so acting that surprised, because American Academy of Pediatrics, along with all other doctors, for years they've been mandating or having rules or guidelines that are essentially edicts that you need to get this long list of shots. So this is just one more shot that they put in there anyways. And I'm giving you plain speak here. We could have Dr. Mom on, and she could give you the technical.
Basically, the pediatricians are saying that kids at that age, this is their argument, are more vulnerable than older people. That's what they're arguing.
For COVID.
Yes, for COVID.
I thought it was the opposite.
Me too.
Well, that's where the fight is.
Yeah.
That's where the fight is.
Well, the problem here is that the COVID shot neither prevents you from getting COVID or
spreading it.
Prevent
you from spreading it.
Shredding it.
Well,
I like to shred that. I like to shred this vaccine. Yeah.
This goes, okay, I'm going to quote Dr. Frank Turek.
Yeah.
Now,
he's not a medical doctor. Right.
Something he said years ago that I think is applicable here. He says, science doesn't say anything. Doctors do. Scientists do. Scientists do. And so when people say follow the science, this is the problem. You got follow the science. You have the CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics both claiming to follow the science but coming to different conclusions.
Mm.
So it's important for us to recognize that scientists don't always have the answer, and sometimes you got to use your own head.
As a parent, and I am a parent, but as somebody who's had children, three of them, I didn't have them. My wife did, but I was part of it. But I'm just saying that I don't think I would give my baby anything but something that's absolutely necessary.
Right.
Now, everybody has to figure out what's absolutely necessary. And in my opinion...
And it would have to prevent you from getting something.
Yes, the COVID shot is not absolutely necessary.
Yeah. Right.
For babies. For babies, not.
Not if you start looking at the side effects.
Right. We'll be back with more Following the Science after this short timeout.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stern. Stand by for news and commentary next. Vacation Bible School may be old school, but it's still very popular among kids across the Fruited Plain. CBN News reports nearly 3 million kids attended VBS at Southern Baptist churches over the summer, some 70,000 making a personal decision to follow Christ. Vacation Bible School, a week-long affair hosted by churches featuring fun adventure themes for kids, along with arts and crafts, singing, and lots of recreation. Many churches turn snack time into an art form. You know, when I was a kid, I got to double dip. I went to my family's Baptist church VBS, then I attended my grandparents' VBS at the Methodist church. Now, the Methodist had a lot better snacks. Almost switched denominations as a second grader because of that. The surge in VBS attendance could be a sign that more young families are now returning to the traditions of our faith. And the best part, kids actually want to get up early to go to VBS. Public school, yeah, not so much. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We hope you're having a great day. Today's Wednesday, August the 20th. I'm Tim with Ed, Wesley, and Fred. We were talking, is Abe on yet?
Yes.
Yes. Abraham Hamilton III joins us now. Abe is the host of the Hamilton Corner each afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time right here on American Family Radio, and he will switch into preacher mode on that show, too. He'll go from lawyer to preacher, back to lawyer. Just a general overall nice guy, too. He'll mix that in there. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, a preacher and a lawyer went into a bar. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I don't have a joke. I don't know why that came to me.
Well, it is the start of untold numbers of jokes.
So a rabbi and a priest.
Yeah.
All right. So, where was it? Okay. Hey, we were talking about what I know this isn't why we asked you to be on. There's another, we want to deal with sanctuary cities and the constitutionality of it. But before we do so, Fred was mentioning a story about the American, what was it called?
The American Academy of Pediatrics.
Okay. The American Academy of Pediatrics, that is the professional organization of doctors, maybe nurses too, I don't know, that have to do with treating children. Okay, we all know that. That's what pediatrics means. They're recommending that that babies get the COVID shot. Okay. Have we got that right, Fred?
As young as 6 months old.
Yeah, get the COVID shot. Now, do you know if they say they recommend it or they say it's safe to give?
No, the wording being used is recommending.
Recommended. Okay. So we were talking about the value or non-value of that before the break. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to ask you, Abe, because Ed and I were talking about this off the air. A lot of these professional organizations that represent various industries or jobs or professions, they've all gone woke. I say they've all gone woke. Many of them have gone woke. By woke, I mean they're very liberal, they're not necessarily representative of the rank and file in that particular profession. For example, Ed, we were talking about the American Psychological Association.
We were talking, and this is during the break, the American Psychiatric Association and the American Psychological Association, they both go by APA.
Right.
But in 1973, the American Psychiatric Association met, I think, their yearly conference or convention, and they were essentially taken over by gay activists who demanded that in the official classification of mental illnesses, which is called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or the DSM, they insisted that the DSM stop citing homosexuality as a mental illness. They took over panels, they made speeches, they tried to shame the members of the APA, and overnight the APA decided to change their classification of homosexuality as a mental illness. In other words, it wasn't based on science. It was based on the shame that these activists brought to the APA and the accusation that the APA was harming the mental health of homosexuals. So when we hear we got to follow the science and, you know, you got to follow the experts, they are subject to political pressure and cultural pressure. And so the American Psychiatric Association changed the quote-unquote science overnight, essentially, because of political and cultural pressure.
Yeah. So comment on this, if you would, Abe.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. My undergrad minor is in psychology. The DSM is basically the standard professional treatise that's used to diagnose mental pathologies, and Ed is absolutely right. It was not the product of learned study, experimentation, application of the scientific method. You literally had political pressure applied following cultural pressure, and the professional organization yielded. You know, they yielded to that. And so to say that these entities are immune from this type of outsized, externalized pressuring, that simply is not true. It simply is not accurate. And so I think that's what you're seeing when you see the recommendation that infants, children as young as 6 months get the COVID shot. The data doesn't support that, you know,
and it's not a scientific
conclusion. It's a conclusion that's germinated elsewhere, you know, and it's sad to see that. But
I see what you did there with the word germinated.
Germinated elsewhere.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the I'm sorry, go ahead and finish your thought, and then we want to talk about
I was just simply saying that the net result of that is you have more and more of the American citizenry that is distrusting when it comes to these professional organizations and these public recommendations, which negatively affects the society as a whole because people don't know who or what to trust.
Okay, let's talk about the story that Fred, go ahead and set the stage for us.
Well, the Justice Department has sent letters to 30 mayors of sanctuary cities. I think most of our audience know what a sanctuary city is. Basically run by Democrats who say, we're not going to let the federal government come in here and arrest people who are in the country illegally. They have sent letters to 30 mayors of sanctuary cities warning them they could be prosecuted if they continue resisting federal immigration enforcement operations. Well, yesterday, the mayor of Boston, who is a Democrat, her name is Michelle Wu, had this to say about that order coming from the Justice Department. Cut number 6.
Boston will not back down from who we are and what we stand for. We will not back away from our community that has made us the safest major city in the country and a leading example of why cities around the country make this country safer, healthier, and more prosperous for all Americans.
Okay, so the Department of Justice sends letters, Abe, to these 30 cities, probably all of them run by Democrats. And did Fred frame the issue of sanctuary cities correctly? I mean, the sanctuary, I'm not saying you didn't, Fred. I'm just saying, the sanctuary cities say to the federal government, we're not going to help you. We're not going to help you enforce federal immigration law. Is that what sanctuary means? I mean, how does that go?
Yeah, that basically you have these mayors who've stated exactly what you said, that they will not aid the federal government in enforcing federal immigration law. And the letter from the Department of Justice seems to indicate that it's communicating to these mayors, okay, if you're saying you're not going to help us enforce federal law, don't think you're slick enough for us not to recognize when you are actively violating federal law yourself. For example, this wasn't a mayor, but many of you, and I know you covered on TI the story of Judge Hannah Dugan in Wisconsin, to where this is a judge in court who helped an illegal alien abscond from Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents who were in her courtroom to detain this illegal immigrant.
Right.
Well, she's now been removed from the bench and been criminally prosecuted under federal law. She attempted to assert that she was immune from prosecution because she was a judge, to which the federal court said, excuse me, no, ma'am. Your position on the bench doesn't give you the authority to violate federal law. And what the Department of Justice is telling these sanctuary cities and these mayors that you do not have the authority to violate federal law. And where you are found violating federal law, you too could face criminal prosecution.
All right. One other question I hear I have, and I know a lot of people are going to go, you don't know the answer to that, Tim? Sometimes I know the answer. I know the answer to a lot of things that I don't, you know what I'm saying, that I don't talk about because I don't want to sound like I'm a know-it-all.
Right. No, we understand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody likes to hear from a know-it-all, right?
Exactly. You're doing the part of an interviewer.
That's right. So I want to ask you this question, Abe. Why do these Democrat mayors want to protect people who are in our country illegally? Answer, please.
Well, that's a good question.
Okay.
The top line answer is they believe it is a boon to their political futures by showing themselves as being favorably disposed to illegal aliens. From their perspective, Tim, there's no one that is illegal.
Okay.
To know that.
That's what I wanted to know. Yeah. From their perspective, there is no such thing as somebody who's in our country illegally.
From their perspective, based on their actions, not just what they say, but based on their actions. But the problem with that assessment is that we have this thing called the Uniform Criminal Code. We have federal law that this is not an insult. This is not an effort to denigrate someone's character by describing them as illegal aliens. Our law describes people who enter our country illegally as illegal aliens. So it's not an insult, but you have people who are willing to violate our law if they view it as something that's politically favorable to them. And that is what the Democrat Party, by and large, has done.
Abe, have there been communities, cities in some of these blue states that have actively resisted ICE? I know there were examples earlier in the summer of people trying to stop ICE agents from apprehending people who are here illegally. Have there been cities that have gone out of their way to let illegal immigrants know that ICE was coming? And would that any of those kinds of actions be chargeable under federal law?
Yes. And in particular, Los Angeles's Mayor Karen Bass, she was smacked down by the Department of Justice because she was publicly touting this hotline. That if you see what appears to be ICE activity, you need to use this hotline so you can notify people that they're coming. And she was directly rebuked by Tom Homan, and she's since changed her tune on that and is not publicly touting that as well, because Tom Homan informed her, if you actively impede a federal law enforcement imperative, that is a felony, and you risk being arrested and prosecuted.
Yeah.
So, Abe, just a question on what Mayor Michelle Wu of Boston said the other day, that they would not cooperate. So in order to break a federal law, does she have to, for example, hide illegal immigrants, be active involving in hiding an illegal immigrant? Can she order her police department to interfere? Is she breaking federal law if she does those type of things?
Yes, if she actively hides illegal immigrants, orders the Boston Police Department to abscond or to conceal the presence of people, things of that nature, that is where they cross the line. So if the sanctuary city does nothing other than fail to cooperate with ICE, and what that simply means is when you detain an illegal alien, that you don't call ICE and let them know, I have an illegal alien here, that may not necessarily rise to the level of violating federal law. But if you're actively concealing or impeding a federal investigation, meaning that you get wind that that ICE is going to investigate, for example, this Home Depot down the road, and you actively impede that investigation by notifying people or interrupting that investigation, and that very well could rise to the level of a federal felony.
All right, here's Wesley. So my question would be, what about the sanctuary cities? Can they be held accountable, or is there a consequence, or can they be sued in the event that an illegal alien commits a crime and harms an American citizen?
Yes. Well, you have the Lake and Riley Act that has now been passed. That's law.
Okay.
So if you have any sanctuary municipality that violates the Lake and Riley Act, that is punishable criminally. In addition to that, one of the biggest sticks, if you will, that the federal government has is the ability to review expenditures of municipalities that declare themselves to be sanctuary cities. For example, you had previous administrations' federal allegations to entities like Planned Parenthood, but President Trump put a stop on that via an executive action to review whether or not Planned Parenthood and others were complying with federal law before they could receive those funds. Now, that freezing activity had been challenged in court. Ultimately, President Trump has prevailed on that point. That is something that can and should be done to entities that declare themselves sanctuary jurisdictions, that their receipt of federal allocations should be reviewable to determine whether or not they are in full compliance with federal law and every other condition necessary to receive those funds. And that's something that I think the federal government should and will look into more aggressively as the Trump administration continues.
You know, just the expression sanctuary city, people say, well, what does that mean exactly? I know what the word sanctuary means. What it means is the cities have declared that they are a sanctuary for people who are here in our country illegally, from the federal government deporting them.
Yeah.
Come to our city and you don't have to worry about being deported. You can stay as an illegal alien.
Well, they can't promise that they won't be deported. They're promising, and Abe can correct me if I'm wrong, they're promising that they're not going to help the federal government. So if you get arrested or you get a ticket, you get pulled over and you don't have a driver's license and you're here illegally, right, or with cities that are cooperating with the federal government, they will turn those people's names into ICE. What these cities are saying is, we're not doing that. We're not helping out the federal government.
Is that right, Abe?
That is correct. Okay. That's what they're saying.
Okay. One other thing about this. I guess I never thought I'd see the day when one of the major political parties in this country, in this case the Democrats, don't give a hoot about people pouring into our country illegally from around the world. They're all for it. And they don't believe in borders. They don't believe in immigration law. They just believe in everybody being allowed to come here, just pour in. That's what Biden did. And they're good with it.
And they'll say it out loud. And they're doubling down.
And that is shocking. I mean, I remember Bill Clinton, when he was president, talking about we need to crack down on people coming into our country illegally through the southern border. Do y'all remember this?
Yeah.
When Bill Clinton was president, I mean, Democrats and Republicans alike always cared about law and order when it came to immigration. And now we have one of the major parties in our country. You talk about a war within. Go ahead.
Well, that's why, if you look at the numbers, that's
in the election, you mean?
No, okay. If you just look at the border crossing numbers, you'll see that there was even one year where Obama's numbers were better than Trump's numbers one year. Because even during the Obama administration, they cared about the border.
They enforced the law.
They enforced the law. Yeah. At the border, it was during the 4 years during the Biden administration is when you had the invasion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still millions and millions came in, and they knew they could come here unabated. So do you want to comment on that, Abe? Why is it the Democrats have been taken over by people who don't believe in borders at all? I mean, where does this idea come from?
Yeah, that is a legitimate question. And the unfortunate reality is this, that you guys will recall America used to have a Communist Party USA. Over time, however, the people who formerly were advocates of and passionately committed to the Communist Party, simply put, they merged into the Democrat Party. And over time, they have overrun that party because you remember the day there used to be a Blue Dog Democrat.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't just one or two. It used to have a lot more of
right.
that. But they have moved away from, you know, historical classic liberalism along the lines of a JFK. They've moved full on to a progressive party, that a touchstone of frankly, the Marxist agenda is a borderless world. You know, the workers of the world unite. So efforts that destroy, that mitigate, minimize and reduce the significance of individual nations, national sovereignty, that opposes globalism, frankly, it's going to find opposition from the Democrat Party. And that's what you're seeing playing out. Now, whether or not they admit that in this description, probably not. But their actions reveal that this is what they're moving toward.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Abe, what do you got coming up this afternoon on the Hamilton Corner?
I want to talk a little bit about kind of the fallout from the Trump, Putin, Trump, Zelensky world leaders kind of phenomenon and to see and to kind of peer into where we could be headed on the global stage on that front, as well as a couple other things that I want to keep in my back pocket.
Okay.
To give you a little bit of suspense.
All right. Thank you.
Like good show, though.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Abe. Take care. See you.
All righty. Thank you.
Okay, that's Abraham Hamilton III, host of the Hamilton Corner.
We've got a – I was going to add once he finished, it has nothing to do with this, but I have a good friend listening to us through the app, and they just wanted to remind everybody you can download the AFR app and listen to us anytime. I think I mentioned that at the beginning as far as downloading the AFR app from the website, but you could also go to any of the app stores.
Yeah, a lot of people who get our radio stations, mm-hmm. American Family Radio, they get it off the tower on their FM signal.
Right.
But then if they leave that, they go into depression. You know what I'm saying?
And they want stations everywhere.
And then they figure out the app, the AFR app.
Yep,
and
problem solved.
And it's like having a station anywhere you go.
Yeah, very good ad there. Right. You can clip that up right there.
Yeah. Big story, Fred.
Well, let's go to Texas.
All right.
All right.
Barbecue.
And
I'm thinking.
We know that the Democrats who fled Texas back a few weeks ago because they wanted to deny the Republicans who have the majority membership there in the Texas legislature, wanted to deny them a quorum so they could vote on these redistricting plans. So these Democrats came back Sunday. They were back in the legislature on Monday. And what the Republicans did was, all right, you Democrats are back here now. We're going to vote on this redistricting today, Wednesday. Now, if you want to go home or you want to go shopping, Democrats, you have to sign a permission slip. And you will be assigned a plainclothes police officer to escort you around
Austin. Make sure you don't take off again.
And make sure you don't take off again. Well, there was at least one Democrat who decided, you know, it's unconstitutional to make me sign a permission slip. So she has stayed the last couple of nights in the legislature. Others were, like I say, escorted to their offices. I think some were escorted to a grocery store and all of this sort of thing. Well, anyway, they are back in the legislature there in Texas this morning, and we are told that they will vote on this redistricting plan. But obviously, many Democrats are upset over being treated this way, having to sign permission slips in order to leave the legislature, et cetera, et cetera. Many people think they brought it on themselves by fleeing to other states. But it looks like this redistricting plan is going to be voted on. It will go ahead. It will give Republicans 5 extra districts in Texas.
Well,
Ed, how does this story move you?
You know what? I was thinking, this is not probably as good a comment as I thought it was when it hit my head.
Right.
Is Texas has the reputation. You remember the Alamo? Okay. Now I watched both versions of the Alamo, the John Wayne version, and then the more updated version of it. It just was kind of a wild hair. I thought, you know, remember the Alamo, and that's what Texas is known for, even against unbelievable odds, you stay in the fight. Well, not these Democrats. They fled. Mm-hmm. They fled the Alamo when Santa Ana wasn't even in sight. And I don't know how you're not disappointed. You obviously you're going to lose this vote. But you're going to lose this vote no matter what. But why don't these Democrats stay in the legislature, take their beating like Republicans have
make
to?
Make their case.
Make their case. Yeah. That's what Republicans have to do in Illinois and California.
Right, right.
They have to stay. They have to. You know you're going to lose because the odds are overwhelming. But no, they ran. Listen. They ran from the fight. And to me, it's an act of cowardice. It is an act of irresponsibility. They got elected to show up at the state house and represent their district. And just because you're in the minority as a party in Texas, you stay and you do your duty, but not these Democrats. And, yeah. And it's painful to hear that the state of Texas has to assign a plainclothes police officer to make sure that you as a legislator comes to work.
Yeah. You know, and the fact that the irony here is they fled to Illinois. Huh? And right. Chicago. Didn't they go to Chicago?
Yep. Yep.
Now, I don't think any of them were carjacked while they were there, but it could have happened very easily.
Yeah.
In Chicago, which is not representative of the whole state of Illinois.
Right.
Because almost
we have listeners.
Anytime you meet somebody from Illinois, what do they say, Wesley?
I went to Cairo, Illinois, very southern Illinois. And we had an AFA event there. And the first person that got there about a half hour early. And the first thing that they said when they shook my hand was, I want to let you know that we don't have anything to do with Chicago.
Yes.
Well, they went to Chicago, and but Illinois, look at Illinois' congressional map. It looks like a jigsaw puzzle.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. All these states, to a certain extent, do gerrymandering or redistricting. I think Illinois is 40% of the state's Republican.
Yeah. Only
20% of their districts are Republican.
It's like 12%.
12%,
now.
Maybe. Yeah. So I mean. All these states do a lot of redistricting to favor their political party that's in control. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.